Good morning. It's 9:30 at Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. Mark DeGroft with you live this morning with the live reading of the Green Valley News. Welcome aboard. Thanks for joining me today. That's Francis Lay's Snow Frolic from the movie Love Story. You're going to need it. It's going to be warm today. Snow sounds good. It's currently 76 degrees in Green Valley as we move forward to a high of 88. At 88 for a high, low today is 62. Tomorrow, 78. Friday, 72. Saturday, 72. And Sunday, 81. Precipitation right now, zero, and no chance of it today. Humidity's 10%. The wind's out of the east-southeast at 24 miles per hour. So not a totally bad day in Green Valley. Thanks for joining me. Let's see what's going on in our world here in southern Arizona. Pima County staff told county supervisors on Tuesday that state bills are under consideration to address a $122 million shortfall to the state's budget for developmental disability. Sarah Davis, who is the senior advisor in the county administration office, told the Board of Supervisors that the shortfall is from the Division of Developmental Disability Services. The division offers health care coverage to those eligible for long-term care, Arizona long-term care, which is ALTCS, through a contract. She said the funds assist about 60,000 state residents, with about 1,000 in Pima County itself. Davis said a resolution extended the deadline to fund funds, but the full legislature would need to pass a bill to allocate extra funds. She said the program is expected to run out of money by the end of April. Davis also said it was important for supervisors to remember that the federal budget bill proposes $880 billion in Medicaid cuts, which funds access in Arizona. Cuts to access would affect not just the accessibility of care for critical services across these resident groups, but it would be harmful to the provider network, the hospitals, families, and overall economic impacts across the country, Davis said. The Center Square reported Access and the Arizona Chamber Foundation are warning Medicaid cuts led by the Republicans and Trump administration would significantly impact families, senior citizens, and people with disabilities. U.S. Senator Representative Ruben Gallegos said cutting Medicaid would lead to a recession. That means rural health care providers would lose their jobs, hospitals will close their doors, people will be forced to rely on the ER for basic care, and hardworking Arizonans will foot the bill, Gallegos said in a press release. Gallegos fellow Arizona Democrat Senator Mark Kelly said in the same release that cutting Medicaid is not a budget line item, but people and livelihoods. The Center Square did not receive a response from the Republican Party of Arizona or of any of the state's Republican delegation to the U.S. House. According to the press release, nearly 2 million Arizonans rely on Medicaid for health coverage, which includes over 750,000 children and more than 72,000 seniors and people with long-term care needs. The release said it would also impact many low-income adults. Gallego, Kelly, Access Chamber, and Arizona Democratic U.S. Representatives Yasemin Ansari and Greg Stanton all signed the release. In Pima County, Davis said about 25-30% of the county's population is covered by Access, with 66% of them traditional enrollees, 30% in expansion groups, 4% through the ALTCS. ASCCH had one expansion passed in 2000 through Proposition 204 that makes up the bulk of the additional enrollees. Davis said Prop 204 removed the responsibility of indigent care from the counties to the state Medicaid system and our individuals falling within the 100% of the federal poverty limit. The second expansion only accounts for 4% of county access enrollees. It was part of the Affordable Care Act expansion, representing people meeting 100 to 133% of the federal poverty limit. As for the county's access enrollees through ALTCS, Davis said 35% are younger children that are under 18. This is a group that has some of the most significant health and care needs, including disabilities, intellectual and developmental disorders, she said, about ALTCS enrollees. So it's a smaller group across traditional enrollment pockets, but it is critical. She told the board 37% of all Pima County access enrollees are 18 and younger. So reducing Medicaid enrollment would leave thousands of residents without health care coverage, Davis told county supervisors yesterday. You'll see lots of narrative is being drafted on this, not only just to direct at our federal level, but you'll see a lot of concluding statements on that today as the state gets through their budget. And there's DOGE funding cuts. Department of Government Efficiency senior counter advisor Sarah Davis also said new data showed U.S.-based employers announced more than 275,240 job cuts in March, with DOGE actions linked to 216,670% or nearly 79%. She said it was 205% increase compared to March in 2024. Department of Labor data suggests that claims for unemployment is as high as it was in November of 2021, Davis said. Although first-time claims are starting to reduce, we're seeing an increase in the unemployment rate of 4% to roughly 4.2%, increasing slightly every month. 9:38 here at Sunsounds. This is kind of a sad story. Numbers show that Pima Animal Control Center is putting down more animals. In the first 3 months of 2025, PACC euthanized 328 dogs, 165 more than the first 3 months of 2024. Acknowledging he has received internal questions about the increase, the new PAC director, Steve Kozacik, recently issued a memo of volunteers and staff stating the county has not formally changed any policies since he came aboard in December. However, I have been clear to staff on the behavioral intake and clinic size that we must consider the safety of the public as well as our staff and volunteers when making decisions related to the outcomes of our animals. Of the dogs put down this year, 256 had medical issues, 64 had behavioral issues, Kozacik wrote in his memo. During the first 3 months of 2024, 140 had medical issues and 21 were euthanized due to behavioral issues. That's an 83% year-over-year increase in medical and 205% increase for behavioral. Kozacik pointed out that overcrowding at PAC is a consideration when determining whether your animals will be euthanized. At the time he wrote the memo, there are 682 dogs in a shelter built to house just 233. When the PAC team is considering euthanizing animals for medical reasons, Kozacik explained they look at quality of life factors, the extent of post-op treatment needed, effect on staff providing that post-op treatment, and isolation space that may be available. Last year, the animal census may have allowed more flexibility when taking in dogs with distemper, but now it would result in widespread disease within the pack, he said. When one simply looks at the number of animals put to sleep without considering the underlying reality of disease avoidance, shelter stress, danger to staff and volunteers, and the rest of the year-to-year overcomparison is flawed, Kozacik wrote. He said that he applauds staff for considering both the quality of life of animals and the safety of the public seriously, and yet even with that focus in our decision-making, the shelter is still at more than double capacity. That's inhumane for the animals we have here looking for new homes. In an interview on Tuesday, Kozacik said the public is responsible for the overcrowded conditions of PAC. Not enough of the pet owners are spaying and neutering their animals, the licensing, microchipping, or vaccinating them. We're playing the hand the community has dealt us, he says. I'm not trying to shift the blame, but the numbers are the numbers. He noted in his memo that the number of dogs euthanized in March for behavioral issues was 40, up from 6 in March of 2024. In the memo, Kozacik said that since April 11th, staff members and 19 volunteers have been bitten by dogs in the shelter. Three of those people ended up in the emergency room. Kozacik also noted that two members of the public have been killed by dogs since he started. There are signals that the focus on the safety of the public, both for workers at PAC and out in the community, have got to be part of the decisions we make with respect to what we're placing out of adoption, he said. In January, Tina Wager, 61 years old, was killed by a pit bull mix she had been fostering. Wager volunteered for various rescues in southern Arizona, including the PAC. On April 2nd, Kevin Rangul, 43 years old, died 3 days after he was attacked by six large breed dogs 2 miles northwest of the San Javier Mission. The dog's owner, Martin Martinez, 60 years old, was arrested on suspicion of manslaughter. And according to Kozacik, Martinez has until 5 o'clock p.m. Thursday, tomorrow, to post $5,050 in bond for the dogs and to request a hearing before a judge who would determine if the dog should be returned to him. If he doesn't post bond or if the judge determines the dog should not be returned to Martinez, Kozacik said the county will gain custody of the dogs and then determine their fate. Kozacik said he doubts, given the circumstances, that the dogs will be returned to Martinez. The guy has a pretty high bar to cross in order to convince a hearing officer he should get the dogs back, Kozacik said. He'd have to prove that he's a responsible pet owner who can show that it was just an unfortunate and unique accident. He said he'd also have to show that if you take the dogs back, you'll never hear from me again. And it is very likely the county will gain ownership of the dogs and then have to euthanize them, Kozacik said. 4 of the dogs were unaltered. All 6 were found with no blood on them. Originally, county officials said 5 dogs were involved in the attack. A 6th dog was later picked up at the scene, Kozacik said. Court documents indicate 5 of the dogs were German Shepherd, Pit Bull, and Mastiff mixes. He was unclear what the 6th dog was, but said it was another large breed. Even if there's a chance some of the dogs did not participate in the attack, Kozacik said he's unwilling to roll the dice and have it happen again. He said PAC and the Pima County Sheriff's Department have documented past attacks by the dogs, but they could not take action in many of those instances. We need someone willing to press the case forward, he said. According to records obtained by Green Valley News, a woman told an animal control officer she was walking past Martinez's house on July 11, 2022, when a pit bull ran out, bit her on the foot as the owner watched and laughed. PAC reports indicate that they gave Martinez a leash law citation and an animal biting citation. A couple of weeks later, the report indicates one of Martinez's cousins called PAC to ask why they hadn't removed the dog because it has bitten 35 people, including himself, in quotes, 2 days prior. When an officer wanted to meet with him for more information, he refused to cooperate and hung up on them, according to the report. Attempts to reach a July binding victim again were unsuccessful. According to another report, another cousin of Martinez was taken to University Medical Center back in February of 2023 after being bit on the head, legs, and arm and sides by a cane corso, a type of Mastiff and a German Shepherd mix. According to animal care officer and deputy reports, the woman told a deputy she knew the dogs had bitten several other people, but when they sought to obtain further information from her, she didn't return voicemails, text messages, and written notices that had been left for her. Deputies described being able to seize a pit bull and a puppy the day of the attack, but they were unable to take any of the dogs into custody because they evaded them and ground was too muddy and slippery. One deputy wrote that an animal control officer entered the property at one point. The cane corso did come forwards on several occasions, at which point I nearly had to shoot it to protect the officer. The deputy wrote every time anyone came near the fence, the cane corso lunged at them. According to the report, deputies and animal control officers spent 3 hours trying to seize the dog and German Shepherd before giving up due to the conditions and exhaustion. Records show that 2 months later, a Mastiff and German Shepherd inflicted several deep bite wounds to a man's lower right leg. Martinez told authorities the man was bitten because he was a stranger who had entered his yard. On May of 22nd of 2024, a woman called PAC alleging Martinez's dogs had killed one of her dogs while she was at work one night, but she had no evidence. She also reported in seeing five of her dogs chasing a bicyclist 2 days earlier, causing him to fall. According to the report, the woman said her son ran out with a gun to save him, and the woman called the dogs home. On February 11th, a woman told authorities she was carrying food home when one of Martinez's German Shepherds attacked her, biting the back of her thigh. She and her husband said Martinez has multiple aggressive dogs that he often lets loose. A deputy used his public address system to make contact with Martinez with no luck. Pack took custody of the dog in question, and the deputy returned to patrol. On March of 30th, 10 hours after Rangel was attacked, a woman reported that she came home from work and found her dog with a large gash in his side. She suspected four of the five mixed-breed dogs that had been roaming near her house in recent days were responsible. She pointed out Martinez's home and indicated that's where the dogs lived. The case was closed in pending contact with the dog owners. The report also stated that the described dogs she witnessed are a pack under quarantine for several dog bites to humans, an apparent reference to the attack on Rangel. In his memo, Kozlowski outlined the factors taken into consideration when dogs are euthanized. Behaviorally, those include bite history, the severity of the bites, and circumstances under which the bite took place. They also include dog and dog fights and how they were initiated, repeat behaviors, documented shelter decline, overstimulation, and to a lesser degree, the length of stay. 12 minutes in front of 10 o'clock here at SunSounds. The Pima County Board of Supervisors Tuesday appointed Andres Caño to fill the District 5 seat that was vacated by Adelita Grijalva, who resigned on April 4th to run for Congress. Caño was elected to the state legislature 3 times and resigned in his third term to pursue graduate studies at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He was also an aide to former supervisor Richard Elias, whom he considered a mentor, and was hired in June of 2024 as Director of State and Federal Relations for the City of Tucson. He was approved by a 3-0 vote, with Supervisor Steve Christie absent. The district is nearly entirely in Tucson. The Board of Supervisors had 6 applicants qualify for the open District 5 seat. Supervisor Jen Allen moved to appoint Caño, with all 3 noting that he was best suited to fill the seat amid current budget planning for fiscal year 25-26. Caño's appointment runs through December 31st of 2026. A primary and general election will be held in 2026 to fill the remainder of the term through December 31st of 2028. The board approved a 4-0, making Allen the new vice chair, giving Grijalva's seats on the Pima Association of Governments and Regional Transportation Authority boards to Supervisor Matt Hines. Supervisor Rex Scott made a substitute motion nominating himself to the seats, but it died after failing to receive a second. And the board also approved appointing Caño to visit Tucson vacancy. Well, Green Valley resident Gudrun Price has donated $100,000 to the Gospel Rescue Mission in Tucson. Price presented the donation on Tuesday to Communications Director Bruce Berkman, Chief Development Officer Dennis Treadwell. Price, who has been giving money to many organizations in Swarich and Green Valley, donated after hearing that an anonymous donor is matching donations up to $100,000 to the mission. Well, according to the Sororita Unified School District across the country, now in parts of this community, students have organized, are participating in a game called an assassin. A student organized game typically involves participants trying to tag each other with water guns and posting the encounters on social media. SUSD wants parents and students to know that although it may look harmless, the activity frequently leads to unsafe behavior, such as reckless driving and trespassing. The replica weapons or toys can also be mistaken for real firearms. In addition, SUSD has said that the game isn't affiliated with or sanctioned by any district school, and is not allowed on any district property, including parking lots or at any school-sponsored events. The district wants families to talk with their children about the dangers, real-world consequences of the game, reinforce that safety comes first for themselves, their classmates, and the community. The district wants families to encourage their students not to participate. And during last week's Suarita Unified School District Governing Board meeting, Superintendent Manny Valenzuela announced two new principals. Drew Chambly will be joining Suarita High as a new assistant principal. He currently works at Cienega High School. He has a bachelor's degree in special education and has coached football. Ariana Van Hurbik will be leaving her position as the assistant principal at Anza Trail School to become an assistant principal at Walden Grove High School. She has a bachelor's degree in elementary education and a master's degree. And Walden Grove High School Student Council posted its 2025 Lip Dub on YouTube. A lip dub is a music video that combines lip syncing with choreographed movement and often is filmed in one continuous shot. You can watch a 12-minute video on YouTube. And the Suarita Navy Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, ROTC, was designated the Area 20 Unit of the Year, and it placed 19th overall in the nation. 9:53. After nearly two decades as music director and conductor with the Green Valley Concert Band, John Snavely led his final concert on Sunday, titled Chapeau. The concert was held at the Suarita Unified School District Auditorium. The GVCB Board of Directors contacted Jack Stamp to compose a tribute piece with five movements for Snavely. John is unique in that he likes to dress up for the pieces. He's notorious for that. Everyone comes to expect it, Stamp said. So I realized, and I decided to write a piece called Chapeau, which is French for hats, and write a piece where he has to wear a different hat for each movement. After nearly two decades of leading the Green Valley Concert Band, he led his final concert on April 13th. And after putting his heart and soul into leading the band for 18 years, Stavely said the timing was just right to step down. I brought the band to a place where I'm proud to leave it, he said before the concert. They sound good, they're in financially good shape, and the audiences are responsive and love the band. So sometimes it's just time to do something. Okay, it's 9:54. Let's go ahead and take a look at the police beat here. It goes back to April 7th, but I'm going to go ahead and start on April 10th. The Sheriff's Department received a call from somebody who was concerned large amounts of money were coming out of a bank account, and it had been a couple of weeks since they had heard from the account holder. Deputies checked and found that the person was fine. A South Avenida Cuatro resident called the Sheriff's Department because a neighbor had informed him he was a dead man. He also told the neighbor's wife he made arrangements. He later called back and said his neighbors were trying to intimidate him by staring at him as he tried to put up a fence. Deputies spoke with all the parties both times. No crimes had been committed. A woman in California called the Sheriff's Department because her intuition was telling her a missing 16-year-old boy was being held against his will inside a specific Green Valley home by a woman. Nothing she reported could be validated. And the Sheriff's Department received a call from a landscaper who said a client was refusing to pay him because he refused to do additional work that his country doesn't perform. The Westmore Drive resident also called the Sheriff's Department twice. He complained that the landscaper didn't finish his work, and when the landscaper left, he stole $200 worth of his tools. Investigators will look into the theft claims. The other issues are civil matters. And a landscaping company called the Sheriff's Department because a man was harassing employees who were mowing lawns on South Paseo Sarta. And the department received a call from a man who was worried because he received a credit card he hadn't applied for in the mail. When he tried to cancel it, they asked for his Social Security number. A South La Higuera resident called the Sheriff's Department at 3:30 p.m. to report somebody had damaged her window screens at 4:30 a.m. Sheriff's Department received two calls from a Green Valley woman. During the first, she asked for medical assistance. During the second, she tried to cancel Santa Rita Fire District because she said her husband was threatening her, saying he wants her dead. April 11th, somebody called the department to report that 2 days earlier, a disruptive and verbally abusive man got into a fighting position when he was asked to leave the administrative offices of Green Valley Recreation. And a UPS store employee saved an elderly man from being scammed out of $10,000. People pretending to be from Apple Support, the Social Security Administration, and the U.S. Marshals Service had convinced the man to ship the money to an address in Chicago. But the employee recognized it was probably a scam and contacted the Sheriff's Department before the package was shipped. PCSD detectives verified that it was, in fact, a scam. And a West Camino Alameda resident called the Sheriff's Department at 10:15 p.m., reported the neighbor was drunk, screaming vulgarities in the street. Deputies only found two quiet people outside, and the caller admitted she called 911 because she thought her neighbor should have been inside. April 12th, the West Villa de Anza resident called the Sheriff's Department, worried that someone would target absent neighbors because a landscaping company had dropped off bags of rocks and distributed company flyers around the neighborhood. A West Continental Road pharmacy employee called the Sheriff's Department about a woman in her 20s they suspected was acting distraught in order to steal items. The woman was taken into custody on an outstanding misdemeanor warrant. She admitted to using fentanyl after melting straws, tinfoil with residue, and a broken pipe were found on her person. And the Sheriff's Department received a call about a man carrying an AR-15 assault rifle near La Cañada Drive and Villa Alamos. The caller was informed by the man had been unidentified, being monitored, but that his actions were well within his rights under the Arizona law. And that, my friends, will take care of the reading of the Green Valley News. I thank you for listening. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll see you next Wednesday.